Meandering in the margins of medicine, it's the Short Coat Podcast.
Weird news,
fresh views,
helpful clues and interviews.
By students, for students.
Subscribe to our weekly show at theshortcoat.com.
Welcome back to the Short Coat Podcast. I'm Dave Etler. Look around you, people. It's well into spring, and as we relax into spring, our spirits have lifted. We're lying outside on the roof in our bikinis, metaphorically speaking. Except finals are almost here. That makes us tense. Increases the pucker factor. You know what I'm saying?
Which really. One?
Your nether regions. The pucker in your nether regions. So I'd suggest that you use the next 50 minutes that we are together to let that go. Enjoy the scent of cut grass and float gently down the warming river of life. Along with today's co-hosts, Aline Sanduk.
Hello.
Lisa Weir.
Hi.
Cole Chaney.
Hello.
And Allison Pletch.
Hi there.
Allison, yes, got some sir. Sad. I don't want to start out on too sad a note, but let's start on the most sad note possible. Prince died yesterday.
Yeah. That's sad.
And I know that you were particularly...
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I wouldn't presume that I was any more like grief-stricken than anyone else in this room. But I did come to you immediately when I heard the news.
She actually came to my office.
Yeah.
I wasn't there.
I'm sorry for your loss.
Aww.
Well, for everyone's loss. And and the people of Milwaukee. Can you imagine being like someone from Milwaukee and Minneapolis and just
like
feeling
the only celebrity
just...
that ever lives there.
Oh. Yeah, I was going to say his studio was in Minnesota proper.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
That's where he passed
his
away.
His whole professional life he pretty much lived there other than when he was touring.
So loyal. To where he's from. And anyway, I just, I feel a little bit selfish in my grief because part of it is that I will never be able to see him live personally. And now that, you know, that is never going to happen.
You're never kind gonna, of, like, you were kind of a rabid fan and you never saw him?
I don't have this kind of money. I would love to see Beyonce, but I don't have like $700 to go see.
Just wait a few years. I think hologram technology will catch up to your desire to see him live.
Yeah.
See him not live.
Was he touring recently?
Yeah, he was in the middle of a tour, in fact.
Oh, recently.
Yeah. Yeah. So the story that I read, he like landed in his plane, emergency landed in Moline. He wasn't feeling well and emergency landing in Moline. He was discharged from the hospital a few hours later, and then he was found deceased in his place in Minneapolis.
Do we know yet what he passed away from?
I'm sure by the time this comes out, we'll know more, but I think it looks like it was probably complications from the flu or something like
that. Yeah, which is also
because he's been sick
like,
for weeks, apparently, weeks and months or something.
Like, I almost feel like that is also like an injustice because of the great impact that he's had on the lives of individuals and like the music world, that he died of upper respiratory tract issues. Like, I think it should have been struck by lightning or been consumed by a tornado or something that is congruent to his...
Something Prince-like.
His magnitude, I guess.
Yeah, no kidding.
I'm so sad.
I'm sorry, isn't that kind Prince, of that you didn't go up in purple flames.
Something like that, you know? I don't know.
Didn't die in purple rain. Har, har.
So sad. Anyway.
Well.
Thanks for taking the moment, Dave. I appreciate it.
I mean,
he was a groundbreaker.
So she came to my office and she missed me. And then as I was walking down the hall, she was sitting in a chair talking with her man, Josh. Mm-hmm. And she like practically hung up on him.
I was like, Josh, I gotta go.
I gotta go. There's something way more important. And then she was like, Prince is dead.
Oh, God.
The thing about Prince, and I'm gonna put Lenny Kravitz in this category, I'm not sure who else, is they're so fashion forward and they're so interesting. You think that they can't be that good musically. That's my first impulse is like, and Gaga, I'd put in this category. You're too out there, so I'm guessing that's your shtick. And then you see them perform and you see, you know, obviously not seen him live, but you've seen him play guitar. You've seen him all these like YouTube. And you're like, oh, my gosh,
musician.
He didn't need a shtick. That was just him.
Yeah.
He was actually wildly talented in addition to being this sort of interesting
eccentric.
Fashion. Yeah.
Yeah. I completely agree. Usually when you see very high fashion people who pull these antics, you're like, oh, they must be compensating for something. But in his case, That's just who he was.
You know, that's because I feel like those are the pop stars that we have to pick from nowadays. There's Justin Bieber. There's, I mean, I love Selena Gomez, but I mean, let's be real. She's not Prince musically and never will be.
You like the baby face look on a woman's body?
I mean.
She's got a, okay.
Doesn't she look like she has a child's face?
She does. She does. She's got these cheeks, you know. But anyway, like I said, there's just not, who do we have in our, like, you know, as pop stars now, like who are
I would argue
gearing themselves towards us that are as musically gifted as Prince, but also artistically kind of out there. Like
I would argue Zayn.
I don't know about
from One
Get
Direction.
Out.
I'm just kidding. No, not at all.
Okay.
Not
I have
in
a suggestion
way.
Though.
What?
Justin Timberlake, I would say, he is talented and also funny. But kind of down to earth, like not on the same level of eccentricity as Prince, but like a good role model, I would say, and someone who's musically talented.
You know, I've seen him play an instrument, so there's that.
It was the recorder.
Yeah. Hot cross buns.
Well, okay, the thing that's really groundbreaking about Prince, I would say, is that he made it okay for men to be effeminate and still sexy and masculine, I would say.
Yeah,
that's
that's what I've been banking on.
Him and David Bowie and
the
stuff.
Pucker fact.
Yeah, Bowie, Justin Timberlake is the same. Like he's masculine, but he has like a softer voice and like some kind of feminine features that make him weirdly androgynous, but in an appealing way. And before Prince and some other kind of groundbreaking artists, that was not okay. You were either totally masculine or totally feminine, but there was no in between. You know what I mean?
I've never seen a recording of a Justin Timberlake show, but I think one of the things that proved again and again that Prince was an amazing musician, and let's just keep it that, was an amazing musician, was when he would go off on these jam sessions. Like he would be playing his hit and he would take off on this incredible musical riff with all, like, in a coordinated fashion with all of his bandmates who probably were just as talented, you know. And I that to me was like the virtuosity of Prince, whereas I'm not sure that you will find those sorts of concerts. Like I said, I've never seen a Justin Timberlake show, but like,
no, that's fair.
I can't see him like just going crazy musically on stage without, you know. Anyway,
no, I'd agree with you there. I wouldn't know either. I don't go to a lot of concerts. It's not in my budget right now.
Well, R.I.P.
Let's go crazy.
Our friend Prince.
I know.
I'm glad that he got rid of the symbol before he passed
formerly
on.
Known as.
Well, oh, did he really? I didn't know what we were calling these days.
It was that male-female.
Yeah, he ditched that a while back.
Combo.
I believe, right? I'm glad he did that because it would be a little awkward now. But thank you for that lovely remembrance.
Thanks for giving me the time.
Hey, we've got a listener question again.
Let's do it.
Which is which I continually find exciting. Keep coming.
This is
short
exciting.
Coats. Here's I think his name is Rehan, who is looking forward to medical school interviews.
Good luck.
Hi, my name is Rehan. I am from Montreal, Canada. I think this is a great show you guys have. The Short Code podcast is awesome. I love it. Right now, I have been invited to interviews for several medical schools in Quebec. I was wondering if you guys could give me some tips, some advice on how to prepare for them efficiently. They are MMI type of interviews. Thanks a lot.
Quebec, yay!
How many medical schools are there in Quebec?
5.
There are?
Yeah.
How do you know that?
Because I'm Canada. From Montreal.
You're from Montreal? I lived there for 6 years.
Why are we not already friends?
I don't know.
That's amazing.
I love that
But
place.
I couldn't tell you how many are in New York, so it's just cool that you knew that.
Oh my gosh, New York.
Yeah, well,
I know there's a lot, but I don't know.
Because I thought about applying there for a while, because I still have Canadian citizenship. So there's McGill, there's the University of Quebec in Montreal, there's the University of Laval, University of Sherbrooke, University of Montreal.
She's going to do
said
it.
That, I think.
Oh, maybe another one. I'm not sure. We can Google it, but I think that's all of them.
So,
but my thing, McGill is the one that pioneered the MMI that now has spread to other schools here, like Stanford and Harvard and things like that.
For the listeners who don't yet know, this is
Canadian.
The multiple mini interview, right? And it sounds like speed dating to me a little bit. Basically, you have a series of 8 to 10 minute interviews with people, and you sort of rotate between them. And there's, from what I'm reading, you guys maybe know a little bit more than about this than I do.
I did one.
Did you do one?
I did one.
So there are, there's a role play type there in which you and an actor interact in the presence of an interviewer. And then there's a simple task where two students work together to complete a task. Traditional medical school interview, but a quickie. And then some scenarios with questions from the interviewer. What kind?
Very similar. So, like, we built Legos. I think it was me, another med student, and I in a room, and we had a plan for how to build this Legos. Then someone just watched us. You know, I think I was the builder, but I couldn't see the plan, and he was the instructor, and he couldn't see the Legos.
And so, wait, was it you and another applying student?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It was.
All right.
And then, yeah, he could have sabotaged me. That'd be an interesting way to do it. And then I think there's like a mini essay, and then there was another weird one with, oh my gosh, some other odd tasks too. I mean, there were like 4 or 5 different things. So it was about, it encompassed what you said, and then there was even other weird activities with building and creativity. And I think one was having me speak on a topic totally unrelated to medicine or aspirations or anything like that. And I think there was one that was really general, like, how do you feel about Obamacare or something like that, which is a little more focused on med school.
Okay.
And it's stressful and it's tiring, but I think it's good. I think the big defense of it, and I would defend it as well, is that if you bomb in one area, you can really look strong in another, as opposed to a med school interview is kind of hit or miss, all or none. And I think this is a little bit more broad and trying to tease out your strengths.
What do you guys think? Supposedly a little more forgiving. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
No, it's all right. So how did you prepare? Did you know you were going to walk into an MMI or?
I did because they told us in advance.
Okay.
Someone told me never to read the SDN, which I know that they're on our side now, so I don't want to. But someone said they'll stress you out before.
Well,
so.
Let's just say never read the internet forums.
Yeah. Mm. By anonymous posters, I think, is sort of the thought. And so I avoided that much, but they did tell us in advance there would be an MMI, so I think I Googled what it was, and that was about the extent of it.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm not sure how you can really prepare for an MMI.
That's a good question, yeah.
But, because that's Rehan's question is how should he prepare? I can share a story that we, so last year, episode 82, Nick Sparr shared with us one of his, and I've got that
cool
clip here. Let's listen.
So the first interview also was, my first interview was a prompt where a disease has wiped out the world. There's 10 people on this list, and I have to choose 3 of them to save. That was the prompt. And when I went in, the person doing the interview was a fourth-year medical student, and it did not help that she was also very attractive. So I'm nervous.
All intentional.
I'm going to say you.
Yeah, I like,
do you think
I
they were like, okay, we need somebody really attractive for this one to freak them right out.
So I'm already nervous and explaining to this woman who's also like my age and explaining to her like how I would create this harem essentially to like repopulate the world.
So how'd that go over?
And she's challenging each of my picks for... you know, and because one of my people that I saved in the among these 10 was a stripper, because and my reasoning was that presumably they are athletic, you know, they're fit.
No, that makes sense.
So, I love that anecdote. I don't think he got in. I don't think he was accepted, as I recall. But the point is, I'm not really sure you can prepare for it. I mean, I think what they're looking for, as far as I've read, is, you know, they want thoughtful, mature students who can think on their feet and who can, you know, support their ideas on what they're experiencing, maybe with some life experience, if that's possible. And I think they're looking also for just outgoing and yet reflective people, or people who can at least pretend to be outgoing.
I always find with these interviews, and I helped university students get into investment banking with interviews. And so I would work with a ton of kids over on the undergrad side. And so I'd talk to hundreds of kids. And what we learned is that these super smart people come in and they have all these thoughts swirling around their head. And then when they try to say it, it comes out as just a, like a paintball gun against a wall.
Okay.
And so what you got to do, and I found this even in med school interviews, is you got to kind of have your two or three sort of the notes that you like to hit consistently. So if you're into, maybe you're into preventive women's health, and your second issue is that you're into athletics, and the third thing you like to do for fun is you play banjo. And like, kind of hit those notes and be ready to talk about them and incorporate them into the story, because otherwise you kind of look like you're a rambler, or you're not consistent, or you really don't get your personality heard. So I don't want to call it distill your personality, but really get sort of a compartmentalized part of your personality ready to go and present. And I found those really helpful for me and other people.
I think that's really good advice, actually. One that would apply to both MMI style interviews and more traditional style interviews. Like you said, there's a risk that you can ramble on and on these during these interviews, whereas, I mean, you're going to do the best job of representing yourself as someone who's easygoing and interesting if you stick to some themes. So I guess what I would recommend to this caller is, you know, what Cole said, just pick 3-4 things about yourself that you want to highlight and emphasize in your responses if you can, and make yourself memorable that way.
It's kind of like having your own personal elevator pitch, which I think, like you said, is not even just for the MMI. I think any interview, because how do they all start? Tell me about yourself. And I'm always like, my name is Lisa.
You know, but it's a really good point that Cole is hitting on, to like, it's worth sitting down, taking some time to think, maybe not just about the issues, but just like your personal convictions and values overall, because I think that's what they're trying to get at. And it's hard to articulate those in a med school application except in your personal statement. And not everyone is a great writer, and not everyone has a good writing center where they can get some editing and some advice. But to think about like who you are at your core, because that's really what the MMI is trying to get at, especially with the fact that the time is so limited. And so it has to be not scripted, but it takes some preparation to think about how you want to come across.
Yeah, it's. I think it's the interviewee's opportunity to control the narrative by preparing ahead of time. Whereas a lot of times you walk into these interviews, you don't feel like you're in control. You don't know what the questions that you're going to get asked are. You don't have as much time as you want to answer them fully. But the thing you do have control over is your own narrative. So walk in with something like that, let's say.
So there you go, Rehan. Thank you for calling. If you have something that you would like to ask us about, visit theshortcoat.com/tell us. There's a variety of ways to get in touch with us.
And Rehan, let us know how it goes.
Oh, yeah, definitely. We'd love to hear the stories that you're allowed to share.
Quick question.
Because I know they say as part of the interview, like, don't tell anybody because we're going to use this thing again.
What's the Canadian, can they apply for American residencies? Are the processes similar?
For Canadian graduates or
Canadian med school graduates?
I think so. I think Canadians fall into the broader category of like international medical graduates, but I do know that a lot of them will take the USMLE in the interest of applying to residency here.
Cool.
Just because positions are limited in Canada, even though there are fewer med schools and fewer graduates, a lot of people just want to come here and get American training.
Cool. And they want to steal our residency slots.
Foreigners taking their jabs.
Along this line, I guess, is in terms of preparation. I read an article this week from U.S. News that on how high school students can prepare for medical school.
Oh, no.
They should be enjoying their youth.
Okay. So that's kind of what I thought. I was like a little miffed reading this thing. I'm like, so they want you to, you know, understand the impact of your high school performance.
I think this
take AP classes and maybe take some college level, you know, blah, blah, blah classes. And
so when do they get to live? When do they get to enjoy being a kid?
I don't know. I guess if you're going to go into med school, you can't be a kid.
It's not like running for president. It's not something that you're groomed for from birth. Like, there's a period of your life where you need to grow and be a human being and then get to work, I would say.
Oh, and also make sure that you choose the appropriate extracurricular activities like shadowing and blah, blah, blah. I'm like,
so serious.
Well, fortunately, though, you interviewed for the right preschool to get up to this point.
Okay, that's
so you're already set up.
That's not even a joke.
That's what I'm saying.
My brother and my sister-in-law just found out that they're pregnant and they're having a baby. And I'm super stoked to be an aunt. but I was.
Is this something we're gonna have to delete later?
No. This is super relevant, I promise. I was talking to my sister-in-law about preschool, or even just daycare, and she was 2 months pregnant now, and she was talking to a friend of hers, and she hadn't even thought of it, but the friend was like, "Oh yeah, you should really start looking at daycare centers right now because the wait list can be between 9 and 18 months long."
The wait lists are killer.
It's crazy.
The wait lists are totally ridiculous.
Can I just say, I grew up in a town where we had one preschool. You had no options.
They live in D.C., yes. So there's... Yeah. It's a major city. And
I guarantee you that there are plenty of parents in D.C. who are like, oh, it's got to be Montessori preschool. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, but coming back to like when to start grooming, I guess, kids for careers, I kind of see a benefit to starting in high school, and I'm not sure how it should be done. I definitely don't think it should be focused on, I don't know, knowing what the right extracurriculars are, knowing what the right courses are to take. I mean, it should be focused on education, but one of my interests is increasing diversity in medicine, and I've thought about it a lot. And the more I think about it, the more I feel like if I'm going to, say, be a mentor for someone later on, I'm going to have to start in high school. I'm going to have to start in high school to really help
them. Start mentoring
them.
People in high school.
Yeah, to help them get on track. Because if you don't know that you want to go into medicine by the time you start college, I mean, if you decide that halfway through college and, say, you got a degree in linguistics and, you know, don't have any of your...
You think it's too late in college?
No, I mean, that's what happened. That's why you get, I guess, non-traditional applicants who are, you know, in their 30s prior to starting residency, which is a thing, but maybe you could have figured it out sooner. I'm not sure, really. But when I think about myself and I think about at what point in time I want to, you know, engage with a minority student who has a possible interest in something in the health sciences, I think that maybe high school is where it is.
Well,
is
that specific to that particular group of people, though? I mean,
oh yeah, no, not just medicine. I think they're focusing on the wrong things to focus on in high school. They're saying test scores, grades, AP classes. Like, you can do that. You can do that if you're in the top 1% in all of that stuff. Then sure, you'll probably get into med school.
And don't be bad in high school and expect to get into a college.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's going to be a problem, but. You know,
but I think more importantly,
even
you need
I got into college.
You need to find like that different thing and develop those, like, I suppose, what do they call them? You know, soft skills, the non-academic things. You know, I can't say that I necessarily did that, but my little brother is the person who's done things like that. You know, so in high school, we didn't have a lot of this kind of stuff. We didn't really have AP classes and stuff, but he somehow got
They hadn't
hold
invented
of,
either. They didn't use the letters A or P. In
no,
your
we're
town.
Just not very good in high school. Yeah.
Where I come from, it's GT, the gifted and talented.
So he got a hold of this like broken virtual reality 3D projector, fixed it, started making 3D movies to use on this projector, and like did all sorts of 3D stuff in high school just on his own. And then, you know, after the summer after he graduated, he got his first internship with Rockwell Collins here in Cedar Rapids, being their youngest intern ever. Like, that's the kind of thing that will get you into med school or any other school or job that you want to do in life. Like, finding yourself that project and passion and learning how to do that kind of stuff on your own, like learning how to learn, I think is more important than really like acing your classes, which he did too. He's smart, but whatever.
I already don't like him.
How do you walk the line between motivating your child and making them resent you, Dave? So, like, this article screams of, like...
I'm not...
I've already decided that I'm going to be the bad cop.
Yeah, well,
house.
You're the parent here,
Will's
so...
Gonna be the...
I don't have a key for this. I mean, first of all, for instance, my son, it seems to be sort of intrinsically motivated to do smart kid stuff. So for instance, I'm very proud to say that, so he's in future problem solving. I don't know if you've ever heard of this, but basically it's a thing that's existed for a long time. Kids get together in teams. They look at a scenario of the future, and then they pick problems from that scenario, any problem that they can think of that has to do with that scenario, or based upon that scenario. And then they come up with a plan to solve that problem. And then they go, there are meets that they go to. I'm proud to say that my son's team got first place in the States and is going to the international meet in Michigan.
That's so cool.
It's very exciting.
Really awesome.
I have nothing to do with that. Okay. Maybe my wife's.
Maybe my wife's psychology. Maybe.
I don't know. Maybe my wife's genetics, because she's smart. I'm smart in some ways. I'm not smart in that way. So he's doing that himself. You know, he decided he wanted to take the clarinet, and he's doing great in that. You know, that sort of thing. My daughter is motivated to constantly kick my ass. But and I love her for that too, because she's going to be one of these strong women. I think I have a feeling, which is awesome. But again, it's not something I did. You know what I'm saying?
Nature.
And my wife and I both don't feel very strongly that we have. I mean, we could screw it up.
Well,
you know what I'm saying? But we could. You know, do horrible things like beat them or whatever and like ruin their lives or
maybe what you did do, what we can say you did, however passively, is that you allowed your children to choose what their interests are and then supported them in the development of that passion.
Yeah, well, I really wanted him to take the guitar because, you know, my big problem. So the first thing he wanted to take was the French horn.
That's what I played in high school. That's
the one that you put your fist
hand
in.
Into. Yeah, that's cool.
No, I'm sorry. The euphonium. It was the euphonium.
Oh, okay.
I don't know what that
They're
is.
They're the same. Euphonium is what you same. March with, isn't
okay.
it?
Okay. It's a portable French.
No, euphonium is like the small tuba.
Okay. Kind of, yeah.
Oh, the portable right. French horn is a mellophone.
Oh, my God.
Very nice.
I was a music major.
That's impressive.
Oh,
nice.
That's good. I should know this stuff.
So he just said, I want to take the euphonium. And I thought to myself, the euphonium. And I said, well, what about the guitar? Because, you know, like someday you're going to be sitting around on a beach somewhere.
Impressing.
And, you know, what are you going to do? Whip out your euphonium? I said, I don't know. And he's like, nope, I want to play the euphonium. So he played the euphonium. He didn't end up liking it, but he, you know. So anyway, the point is, yeah, I didn't, you know, I suggested, but I was like, all right, well.
It sounds like you encourage him to pursue his interests without pressure.
Yeah, no, I refuse to. That first, I refuse to get involved with the pressuring thing for two reasons. Number one, I don't think it works all that well to, you know, try to push your kid into doing something they don't want to do. And number two, I can't be bothered. It's probably more apropos, but yeah. At the same, you know, like I don't want to be like, did you practice? Because if you don't practice 100 hours this week, you're going to suck.
Yep. Yeah.
Do you know?
The way it works in our family, and it seems to have worked a little bit, because there's a lot of high-achieving people in my family. Not myself included, obviously.
Doing all right.
I'm doing okay, right. Yeah, compared to them, though. But people are encouraged to do whatever they want.
How is
but
cousin
they have
Justin
to be...
Trudeau, by the way?
Shut up. Really?
No.
Oh, my God.
On that note, though, did anyone predict that we would have a world leader named Justin ever?
It had to happen. It had to happen.
The impression I get from reading a lot of books, and what I noticed from talking to pediatricians on peds actually, is that kids seem to really thrive in situations where there's structure and discipline and routine. And not too much.
Yeah, we don't do those last two either.
But like structure and routine and consistency is important for kids. And like once they understand the lay of the land, then they can really thrive and fall down without, you know, having it be the end of the world. They can get back up because things are consistent.
As a parent, here's the one thing that I wish we did better, which was to kick them out of the house and away from their screens. That would that would probably be something we should investigate now that they're 11 and 8.
That seems so hard in a ubiquitously screened world.
I'll tell you what, the other thing that makes it hard is, you know, the constant fear that parents have these days that they did not have when I was a kid. Okay, so the constant fear of like abduction or razors in the apples or just all the stuff that intellectually I know is total crap, you know, is not true on a wide basis. Yes. I mean, for instance, everybody hears about the razors in the apples. That has never happened.
Yeah, that literally never happened.
That has literally never happened. And yet every Halloween it's like, be careful of the apples, and you know.
And you have no problem taking your child in a car, which is probably the highest.
The most dangerous thing you could do. Like,
so your risk reward system maybe isn't calibrated. None of ours is calibrated.
It's utterly it's calibrated towards stuff that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
On a very wide scale. Mm-hmm.
You know, there was a Freakonomics about this very topic. Like a few months. Yeah, do you remember, Lisa? It was like talking about how news is bad for, I don't know, our internal calibration system regarding risk, because like by the very definition of news, it is unusual, but then it makes us like hyper vigilant to things that are very unlikely to happen.
It's also the other thing that I notice is that Facebook is, you know, destroying my ability to understand, or potentially destroying my ability to understand people's points of view that I don't agree with. Facebook, I mean, I think this stands to reason, but I mean, like, I am surrounded on Facebook, for instance, by people who agree with me because I have systematically unliked everybody else.
But not even
all the D-bags in my life.
But it's not even all your fault, Dave. Part of it's Facebook's fault.
Oh, no,
their
absolutely.
Algorithm only shows you things that they think you will like. I find that myself, that I come from an area that has very different views from myself. And so a lot of people from my hometown and stuff, yeah, we don't agree politically. And they don't show up on my Facebook for no reason. I haven't unliked them or anything. They just don't show up because they post things that when I actually look at their pages, I'm like, ooh, you posted this? Ooh. Mm-hmm. But Facebook doesn't show me because Facebook knows I don't like that stuff. Mm-hmm.
It's very infantilizing.
I actually really, really dislike it. So when Instagram, you know, started talking about changing their algorithm and no longer showing things exactly in order, like, oh, it just irritates me so much. I'm like, I want to decide what I see.
Yeah.
I don't want you to decide for me. So I really dislike Facebook's algorithm, but I use it.
I'd say I'm 6 months clean of Facebook.
Are you really? How did you do it?
I peruse the internet a ton. I'm still going through Google News and ESPN, but it brought me more sadness than happiness. One day I just really thought about the net effect of it, and I think there's some people that use it well, and I wasn't one of them.
I uninstalled it from my phone.
I did.
That's smart.
Yeah. I mean, you can still get to it with the mobile version, but
so many
not if you make your password super complicated.
it's still what you know, if you uninstall it from your phone, then you don't get the little red icon that says you have something to look at.
It's very like, it, what is that part of the brain, the locus coeruleus, that like just shoots off a bunch of like blah into your brain every time you see something?
What does it shoot off into your brain?
It's like a reward center, right?
It's something that draws your attention to literally even the most minor change in your environment. Like someone opens a door, locus coeruleus. Someone yells in the hallway, locus coeruleus.
I despise the red dots on my phone. Like I've turned it off for so many apps. And so then every time I open it, it's like, well, don't you want to turn on notifications for this app? I'm like,
no.
No, I do not. I don't like your dots.
What part of no don't you understand?
Yeah. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to piggyback off what Cole was saying. I think I've considered so many times quitting it, but my compromise is that the vast majority of what I look at on Facebook now is news.
Yeah.
That's how I get my news. Like New York Times, Economist, Washington Post, all these like organizations, civil rights organizations that I, you know, want to be informed by. The only problem is that their counter rebuttal is that like all the titles are very clickbaity. It's like the one thing you should know right now, and that's not very
Yeah, and I've said before on the show I'm very susceptible to clickbait.
I refuse to click on it.
Really?
I will not click on it.
You are a powerful woman.
If you will not tell me what's in your title, I am not giving you my time, because I don't know if it's worth my time.
It's poor.
So I don't do it.
It's poor journalistic.
Can't stand it.
Yes, Corey.
Lisa's a strong, powerful woman who needs no man.
Or clickbait title.
Yeah, can we clickbait that?
The one thing Lisa doesn't need.
You won't believe it.
Scientists say.
Speaking of brains, you're listening to the show and you're thinking that we're sort of having an off week, maybe that's because the quality of information we're sharing, or the jokes, or maybe the audio quality is bad. It's probably because I'm 46 years old this week. Yeah. And
happy birthday.
Thank you. I'm taking next week off to celebrate my birthday. But anyway, the reason I bring this up is because a University of Melbourne study finds that people over 40 work best in a 3-day work week. How many weeks, how many days a week do I work? 5 days a week.
Like a sucker.
Like a sucker. After 25 or 30 hours a week, cognitive abilities decline.
Interesting.
50 or 60 hours is the worst. That's not going to happen. But people who don't work at all have similar poor cognitive skills. So that I think that explains it, because we record the show on a Friday.
Mm-hmm.
I don't
know.
The
end of the week.
Oh.
Oh, so the quality of your thoughts and the way you express yourself is probably worse.
Yeah.
You're talking about just you, though, right?
Just me. Like, I mean, you guys are like young spring chickens with all your
snappers.
Your efficient, marvelous brains. Mine's like turning to goo even as we speak.
I think we should push for this, because not only could you pull out the more productive card, you know, it could be more environmentally friendly. Think of all the lights you wouldn't have to turn on the last 2 days or something.
Yeah, I would just sit in the dark. I mean, there's no reason for me to turn
on
the
lights.
What
are you doing?
Because I'm old and stupid.
No, I was more thinking about keeping the med school running or something. You know, we could just shut it all down.
You're so arms folded.
I shut down at the end of the week.
You're like the Tin Man. All right, so let's talk about age and jobs. And I always think the interesting thing is when you're on the clinics or wards in school, you will run across the doctor who works about 3 days a week and is about 90 years old, a sweet old man or woman who just can't give it up. And these are the people you see that you're like, they found the secret, because most people, the dream is, I want to retire as soon as I can, right? Mm-hmm. I want to squirrel away money and then go be with my grandkids or be on the beach. And when you see these people who still come in, all of a sudden you're like, oh my gosh. And I think for me it was an old OB in Des Moines, and the guy was 90 and he was still walking around like, hey there, sweetie, drop your britches, you know, like, I don't know if have you ever had this experience?
You know, when I try that,
it doesn't work.
I get into trouble. They ask me to leave.
Context.
There's a guy in the parking lot who offers DREs for free. And he just never sees someone.
Well, that was a news story a while back.
No, but you know what? You're right. I think everyone who enters the working world almost immediately starts counting the days to retirement.
Yeah.
And it's really sad, because when you're young, you have all this energy to go and enjoy yourself. But then when you're old, you have all this time, but no energy.
That's why I like doing this on Fridays, though, because I enjoy doing this. Keeps me keeps my brain, my poor addled brain, active on a Friday when I'd probably rather be like, you know, sitting around doing nothing.
We love this too. I don't
know about you guys.
Facebooking,
clickbaiting.
Exactly. Avoiding all the references to Donald Trump. So okay, I'll do my best to be cognitively balanced at the ends of the week when we do this show.
But you need some vitamin D.
You stay sharp by being around young people, isn't that what
that's pretty
shown?
Much what I've decided.
And so you're doing it.
You're welcome.
I've for my entire adult life, I have been working with college and people like yourselves, professional students, and I wouldn't have it any other way.
So exuberant.
Don't fire me, College of Medicine. I'll probably have to go into.
What do you think the biggest downside of working with? Are we flaky? What's our biggest, you know, it's the upside is we're exuberant, we're energetic, and we're dreamers. What's the downside?
There's a little flakiness, but I don't really see that as any worse than, like, real doctors.
The general pop.
For instance.
One of the college professors I was really close to said the downside for her was that we cycled through all the time.
Yeah. Sure.
She would get really close to you and then 4 years.
Yeah, gone. And actually this is a great time to talk about that. I mentioned it at the beginning of last week's show, you know, with Allison's.
Yeah.
And on that show, Deep, and now Cole.
No, I'm 30.
No, you're third year. Allison and Deep departing. Mm-hmm. And you know how every year this time of year I get this little sinking feeling in my stomach and all that kind of stuff. And that actually, again, goes all the way back to, you know, when I first started working with college students, you know, every May, the cool people leave. And fortunately, there's more cool people coming in behind them. But, you know, still I'm like.
But don't they keep in touch? I keep in touch with a lot of them.
On Facebook.
We had an idea of potentially like calling back in like people who did the podcast during med school. Maybe
I would love that.
Phoning in
I
or
like
something.
It.
Yeah.
I would
as residents.
I would love
create
that.
Some continuity.
Yes.
Yeah. We could have every couple of months, like, an alum come back.
If you're like an alumni, I don't know why an alumni would be listening to this show. But if you're an M4 within the sound of my voice and you're listening to this show, give us a call.
Come on down.
Let us know how things are going. And if you're in the area, I'd love to have you on the show and talk about your experiences out in the real world.
Cool. Please.
Yeah, it would be cool to see. I mean, the same way people listen to this show on their way into med school or on the road to applying to med school, it's cool to see people further down the road, even just for us.
Yeah, get out of here.
What's next? And
continuity and of care. Well.
Continuity of care.
No emergency medicine for you.
Speaking of cognitive decline, I've been sleeping terribly lately.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I had Monday? Yeah, on Monday I had this terrible dream. I woke up at 1:50 in the morning because I had a dream that I was in my office and a resident came by and told me that they were taking over my office and that I had to get out, but first I had to clean the walls because they were gonna paint.
There goes that dream logic.
And I said, I'm not gonna clean the walls. For some reason, I had no objection to getting out of my office, but I'm not gonna clean the walls. And then she came back with her boss. And her boss says, no, you got to get out and clean the walls. And I'm like, I'm not going to clean the walls. There are people whose job it is to clean the walls and then paint. That's what they do. I'm not going to do it. And then they, for some reason, dragged me into the residence room or whatever. And I lectured all the residents on how they were being jerks and idiots. And you idiots, this is not how this works. I do not clean the walls so that you can take over my office. That is not going to. And I felt very proud of myself for standing up.
What
for
a speech!
You know what I'm saying? It was brilliant in the dream. I can't remember.
Really gave
it
to those fake people.
Yeah.
The when I woke up, two interesting things occurred to me. Number one, they were all women who were yelling at me and telling me to clean the walls. And number two, I then spent a good hour rehearsing in my head what I should have said during this argument that never actually took place. Like, oh, I should have said that. You dip. You idiot. Anyway, I was up all night until I went back to sleep at 5 o'clock in the morning. So I was a wreck when I came into work because I need my sleep because I'm old. Mm-hmm. I would like to invite you to analyze this dream.
I was just about to say, let's psychoanalyze.
I was really hoping that you were going to say then someone came in and said you were going to have to move offices. I was going to just wrap it up.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I don't have not yet.
Not yet.
My mother once told me she dreamt she ate a giant marshmallow, and when she woke up, her pillow was gone. And I believed her until about sixth grade. Anyway, let's get back to your dream.
The first thing that stood out to me was that all the people trying to boss you around, tell you to do stuff, are all women.
Yeah.
What do you think that means, Dave?
I don't know.
Was it a many women or two women?
Does this tie into your daughter constantly wanting to be better at you at everything, and you have to create some speech in your head so that you could tell her who's the boss?
I don't know.
You brought this on yourself. You asked us to.
I did, and it's totally it is a striking detail for me.
But or maybe, I mean, a lot of times people stereotypically think doctors, males, that kind of stuff, but all the residents and doctors are females. And they're very strong and in their convictions of making Dave get out of his office.
I think it's also significant that they wanted you to do something that probably in their mind, I think this is the most significant thing in my mind. They wanted you to do something that to them was oh, no big deal. He'll just wash the walls. But you know deep down that's a huge undertaking and it's a lot of work. And that perfectly mirrors a lot of things we talk about.
You got to do it right.
Yeah.
Number one, if you're going to do it, you're going to do it right. I don't know how to wash walls.
Yeah.
You know, I might spray some Windex on them and that wouldn't work. Mm-hmm. I did look up a few things on the dream analysis.
Wait, before you get there, what were the things that you thought of to say in response? Let's look into that and see what that could mean about you.
I really am not sure that I can recall them at this point, but they were, just more
I do not recall.
When you have a mental argument with somebody, I don't know if other people do this, but, I constantly have mental arguments with people who I don't need to be mentally arguing with. It's like I pick fights in my brain with other people who may or may not exist. And tell me I'm not the only one who does this.
No, I think everyone does it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I'll have these arguments with it. So I think that's what I was doing, was just, you know, rehashing the discussion that never happened.
Okay.
You know, there's a German word for that.
There is.
Really? It's a German word that means to think of a comeback, but too late. No, it's Treppenwitz. The things you should have said, but only occur to you when it is too late. It literally means stair joke.
Treppen
is stairs, right? And fits is a joke.
Of course it does.
So as every comeback you've ever had that only came to you 20 minutes after the other person walked away. The Germans have a word for that, and it perfectly describes my whole life.
I did look up on a dream analysis website. Painting, they say, means a change in your surroundings, your life, a situation, your outlook. When you're painting, you're covering over something, you know, the old with the new. Mm. I was resisting a component of painting anyway, which is the cleaning. So I looked up cleaning. Oh, it's also creativity or expression. So I looked up cleaning, which says, you know, you're getting rid of unwanted things, feelings, thoughts, a desire to make things neat and orderly. And I don't have that.
But you're resisting cleaning, all of this. So you're holding on to everything.
Cleaning up other people's messes.
Oh.
Fixing their problems, coming to their rescue, or supporting their irresponsibilities. No comment. eviction, I was being basically evicted. Mm-hmm. So I'm rejecting or judging myself in some way. Mm-hmm. And doctors, and I interpreted doctors to be bosses, because that's kind of a little bit what happens in my job. I may have issues with authority, such as wanting to rebel or needing more self-discipline. Perhaps a tendency to go along with the crowd rather than follow.
You need
your
to stop.
Path.
This is getting a little too close.
Does
to home.
This have anything to do with your birthday this week?
Well, that's a good question.
Does it have anything to do with who you hope wins the primaries?
God, I don't know who I hope.
Are you worried you'll lose your job if Trump wins?
I'm worried I'll lose my job if anybody listens to this show. So anyway, that's enough about me.
What does it mean when you're catapulted into the air and you don't know where you're going to land? That is a recurring stress.
Oh, that happens to
me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
That seems like you were thrown, like, you know, when you're a child and your parent like tosses you up and catches you.
Yeah.
I think that's where that comes from. For
that's
you
a very positive look on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
but
very
it's kind of
scary. Uplifting.
I get teeth dreams.
I get the teeth dreams too.
They say that those
mine
are the most common.
Disintegrate.
Yep.
In my mouth.
Yep. Exactly.
I've never heard that before.
So distressing.
There's three different bands have an album called Teeth Dreams. It's that prevalent.
Wow.
My mom had teeth dreams. She always has teeth dreams.
It's like we're bonding over you guys having dreams about your teeth falling out.
But do you remember when you're a child and like you bite into the apple and you can feel the wiggly tooth? And it's really like it bothered me a lot. And so for me, there's like a definite root of where it came from.
Yeah, I mean, I have kind of teeth problems. And so actually every time I have one of those, I'm convinced it's real. And actually my teeth are falling apart. I mean, lovely
teeth
one here.
Dreams.
I have weird dreams about things coming into contact with my teeth, which I don't like.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I think you're going to have to expand on that.
Okay, it's very specific. And if you're prone to having unpleasant sensations stick with you for a long time, you should stop listening.
Trigger warning.
Like 20 seconds. So I grew up in Canada where, you know, it's... the winter lasts a long time, and you know, the first snow is really pretty, but then it gets really dirty and gritty and nasty. And you know that like grit that builds up on your car from the salt? I imagine dragging my teeth across that, and then I feel uncomfortable for like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry, but you asked, therefore
that's terrible.
You only have yourself to blame. Also, a mouthful of eyelashes.
Where'd you get them?
That's
all?
Another recurring
stress. So specific for the type of hair.
That's nasty.
My anxiety is very creative. So
I have.
I'm so sorry, guys.
Please
still be my friends.
That exists with guys that get flaps into their mouth. They'll take like a, you know, the part of their chin, and they'll somehow swoop it underneath their mouth to cover up a defect, and it grows hair out.
No kidding.
So these patients have long, dark black beard hairs growing out of their tongue or lateral mouth.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I mean, it's here in the ENT all day long. So it's real.
So there's a reality to mirror my psychological
reoccurring nightmare.
You shave your tongue.
And then it grows back.
Oh man. I have a recurring dream where I'm sort of going in a car and the hills come along and they get hillier and hillier until the point where basically you're like in free fall and then you're not in free fall and then you're in free fall again.
Oh my God, that's a real one. I am often confronted by
it is a real one because I had it.
Yeah, no, I get this too, where I'm driving on a road and it's flat until I get to a part of it that is like perfectly 90, so it's like perfectly straight up and I have to go up it. And then I get to the top and then I have to go down. It's all the same road. It's just for some reason there's like a part of it that is straight up and then a hill and then a part that's straight down.
Oh.
And everyone's like, come on, you can do that. What's the problem? I don't understand.
Those hilly dreams, I just remembered, the hilly dreams are often accompanied by nuclear bombs.
Oh.
Yep.
Interesting.
So, on that note, I call an end to the show, even though I want to just keep going forever and ever today. We're out of here. Thanks so much for hanging out with us today, listeners.
Goodbye, guys.
If you like what you heard,
gals,
go to iTunes, whether you use iTunes or not, and give us a review. The reviews there help us grow the show. And as always, we're listening all over the place. Send us an email, theshortcoats@gmail.com, Facebook, Twitter, theshortcoat.com/tell us. The show is made possible by a generous donation by Carver College of Medicine Student Government and Writing and Humanities Program. Our executive producer is Jason Lewis. Our intern is Corey Christensen. Our opening music is by Dr. Vox, and our closing music is by Agrofox. Talk to you in a week.